Welcome to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. Today it's using the force of finance after the Stoneman Douglas shooting. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. David Hogg does not want your out-of-state friends and family to come visit for spring break. Hogg is a 17-year-old senior at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland. He is one of the student leaders who has emerged from the mass shooting tragedy that has killed 17 people and injured 15 others. Now, it's not that Hogg doesn't want you to spend time with your friends and family who don't live in Florida, but he's turning to a familiar tool for those pushing for big changes, financial force. In his case, he's pushing for meaningful gun control legislation from Florida lawmakers, and without it, he wants tourists to avoid coming to the Sunshine State.
What I'm calling for is a boycott of Florida until there is action taken legally at the state level to ensure that tourists that are coming to Florida are not being put in harm's way due to the lack of inaction of our politicians.
Like a lot of calls to action by the students of Stoneman Douglas after the mass shooting, this one began on social media. A week ago this past Saturday, February 24th, Hogg sent out a tweet saying, "Let's make a deal. Do not come to Florida for spring break unless gun legislation is passed."
What I hope this boycott accomplishes is just reasonable gun legislation that makes sense on both sides of the aisle that both Democrats and Republicans can support.
He knows the power of what he's calling for. The tweet went on to say maybe politicians will listen, quote, to the billion-dollar tourism industry in Florida, end quote. With over 100 million visitors a year, tourism is an industry that generates more than $100 billion a year here in Florida. Hogg's call for a travel boycott has been retweeted more than 60,000 times since and liked by more than 170,000 Twitter handles. He says that the idea came to him when he was being interviewed during one of his many media appearances on cable television since the shooting. He thinks it has gotten the attention of state lawmakers.
Some lawmakers have offered policies in exchange for me to drop the boycott, but none of those policies have really been passed, so the boycott continues.
But Florida lawmakers are poised to vote on a package of responses to the shooting, including raising the legal age to buy rifles from 18 to 21 years old, allowing teachers to carry a gun if they undergo background checks and get training, plus providing new money for mental health programs and school security. Here's what Hogg told NBC6 the day he sent his initial travel boycott tweet.
How can we expect people from across our nation and across the world to come from South Florida if we can't guarantee their safety because of the inaction of these politicians?
He and the other student activist leaders from Stoneman Douglas have challenged entrenched public policy positions with deep-pocketed and well-connected supporters, notably the NRA. They have turned the Florida legislative session on a dime to focus on guns, mental health, and school safety, issues that barely registered, if at all, on the political agenda before the February 14th massacre. Now they dominate the discussion, with 1 week left in the regular session in Tallahassee. And now, with his travel boycott call, he aims to use the state's biggest industry as leverage. He boiled it down to the Sun Sentinel this week.
That's what this is really about. It's economics. That's what everything's about.
About one in every six jobs in Florida is related to the tourism industry. Hotels, cruise lines, air travel, amusement parks all rely on out-of-state visitors. And Hogg realizes his boycott effort, while symbolic, if successful, could cause financial pain for working Floridians.
To the people that depend on the tourist economy in Florida, I say, I'm sorry, but these politicians can take simple actions to ensure that your business and your job survives.
After the student bus trips and rallies in Tallahassee, after the globally televised town hall, after the media coverage of the student activism, a travel boycott has the potential of adding more pressure by adding the financial force of one of Florida's biggest industries. I contacted several hotel and tourism officials, but they declined our invitation for an interview discussing the boycott effort. The state's tourism marketing agency, Visit Florida, said in a statement to WLRN, it continues to market the state, quote, as a welcoming and safe world-class destination. Its statement ended by saying, the Sunshine State is always open for visitors. Here's Hogg on a Facebook Live last week hosted by the Sun Sentinel.
My goal here is not to hurt small business owners. It's not to hurt the bigger business owners. It's to get action and save some lives.
Stoneman Douglas student leader David Hogg's strategy of taking a call for change to the tourism industry is not new. It was done 28 years ago by leaders in the Black community. They targeted the hotel and convention business, getting national groups to cancel conventions in Miami until there was more political and economic inclusion of Blacks. It was sparked by Miami's Cuban political leaders at the time snubbing Nelson Mandela after Mandela praised Fidel Castro for supporting the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. That boycott was called the Quiet Riot, and we'll talk with one of the leaders of that boycott later on in this program. But first, still to come, the tough sell against traveling to Florida.
Especially for students, if they've made investments in their spring break travel, unless they get a refund, I really doubt that they would cancel or change their plans.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Governor Rick Scott had been scheduled to come to Juneau Beach on February 15th and release the latest Florida tourism data. 2017 was probably another record year for the state. Through September, visits were up by more than 3%, putting the year on pace to have the state host more than 112 million visitors. But the day before the governor was set to announce the statistics, a gunman brought an AR-15 to Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, opened fire, and killed 17 people, making it the worst mass high school shooting in America. Since then, student activists at the school have been pushing for gun control measures, calling out companies that have relationships with the National Rifle Association, and using social media to call for a travel boycott of Florida. That last effort takes the gun debate right to one of the state's most important industries. Representatives from the industry did not want to talk publicly with WLRN about the boycott effort. We did speak with Carolyn Lusby about the potential threat posed by such an effort and how the travel industry has responded so far. Lusby is an assistant professor in the Chaplin School of Hospitality and Tourism Management at FIU.
I'm hearing a cry for help, and I'm hearing that, economic pressures do lead to the government to listen, especially in a state of like Florida. I do have some concerns, though, in terms of the impacts that could have on our economy in general.
Talk to me about some of those concerns you have. What are they?
Tourism is Florida's largest industry. We have over 1.4 million people employed directly in the tourism industry. It's a spending direct and indirect of over $100 billion each year. Each day we have 306 million that out-of-state and international visitors are spending. So these are big, big numbers. This is a big impact in our economy. And a boycott, could really influence that. We also know from other tragedies, such as terror attacks or, medical things like the swine flu in the past when we did studies, that just the reputation of a destination not being safe or those kinds of things, it takes a while to bounce back. So, there's that to consider as well.
We saw some of that certainly locally with the Zika virus back a couple of summers ago. But aren't those kind of natural disasters much different than this boycott call stemming from a mass shooter incident?
Correct. It's because there are different reasons why people wouldn't travel. So, after a thing like Zika, or even let's just keep it human cost, like terror attacks, there's still that element of threat, right? Or a perceived danger that would keep people from traveling. So that's a very different thing. And we know that travelers react to perceived risk differently. So, people who travel more, who have more expertise or more frequent travelers are less averse to changing their flights. They're going to travel no matter what, right? And people who are not traveling that frequently would be more inclined to change their travel plans if they perceive the danger has gone up, right? We also know, for example, that women are more likely to change their travel plans if they perceive health risks. But this is different, right? Because this is really just a political call to action. And we've seen some of the car rental companies changing, but this is different because it's a whole industry, right? It's not particular to a company. It's not particular to a specific even area.
You're referring to companies ending their discount programs with the National Rifle
Correct.
Association, for instance.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So, well, to me, I was thinking that would probably be the better call to action instead of just saying don't travel to Florida. Because the other thing is that this whole gun control issue is not just a Florida-based issue. It's an issue all states are talking about, and it's happened not just in Florida, and nobody talked about ending anything when the shooting was in Vegas just recently. And so for me, this is a broader issue. So to single out the state of Florida, I don't know if that would really do that much. to really change things.
It's interesting that perception that we did not see any calls of an economic action after the Las Vegas shooting, another city that relies on tourism.
Correct. Or even when we had, and that was not a when we had that incident at the Orlando nightclub.
At Pulse, right. The mass shooting at Pulse with 49 people dead.
Right. So there wasn't really much. For me, honestly, this feels like a tipping point. It was just one of those things that's been building, and now it's at a tipping point where there's an awareness and something has to happen. I just wonder if a general call for, you know, boycotting Florida as a tourism destination is the right answer, or if maybe tourists should just work in particular more with hotel chains, you know, to leverage those voices or go directly to, you know, to the government.
Is there a reputational risk for a hotel brand, a hospitality brand, a travel brand to get out in front of a boycott like this? You mentioned the rental car companies, Avis, Enterprise, and others that have decided to end their discount programs offered to the National Rifle Association. Is there reputational risk for those that don't do that, or for that matter, for the car companies and some of the airlines that have already done that?
Oh, this is a tough question. I mean, from what I've seen from, you know, of course, with all the social media, there's so much talk on both sides. You know, there's people that have strong opinions one way and strong opinions the other way that are voicing their opinions. But in terms of the actual economic impact, I think it's really hard to tell, you know, are they going to fare worse or better afterwards? I do think that taking a stand is always good.
Is always good. Now, that's interesting, right? I mean, corporate America traditionally has been apolitical.
Correct. But I think more and more, as we've seen in recent developments, they're almost forced to take a stand in issues. And it's almost interesting how private business has become more politicized, if that's the right word to use, right, to voice opinions and be forced to take a stand. In terms of travelers traveling with hotels, it's just so hard to predict, you know. I compare it a little bit to travelers that have any kind of preferences, even green hotels, right? We talk a lot about that, sustainability. It's a little bit the same thing. And in essence, I really don't know in terms of the purchasing behavior if that's really going to change, right? And in terms of the spring break travel and travel to Florida, the other economic issue for the traveler is, you know, changing travel plans now. A lot of people book their vacations way in advance, you know, so I think a lot of their boycott is going to boil down to a simple economic decision. Are they even going to get a refund for their airplane ticket, for their hotel stay, you know, and even if you feel strong politically about something, I don't know if losing money on your vacation is really going to make you want to change your travel plans, despite what you think politically.
Last year, 2017, was a record year for Florida tourism. Do you think, first of all, on the smaller question, this call for a spring break travel boycott to Florida, do you think that's going to show up in any data? Do you think it's going to have any demonstrable effect?
I mean, we do know that tourism is so interrelated, right? There's so many factors that play into it. There's factors in the host country, meaning if their currency changes or the value of the dollar versus the currency, their changes, right, that impacts travel.
Yeah, I think this boycott, though, is directed really at American students who have, you know, maybe a week off in March or April.
You know, in terms of the spring break travel, is it going to impact? I think certain destinations more than others, you know, certain spring break destinations. When you look at where the spring break destinations in the U.S. are, yes, some of the top three destinations are in Florida, particularly for Lauderdale, Panama City, you know, Panama Beach.
So you think it will show up in some way?
I would say it would show up, but minorly. But like I said, especially for students, if they've made investments in their spring break travel, unless they get a refund, I really doubt that they would cancel or change their plans.
The larger question is then, beyond the specific call to boycott spring break travel, but more generally the environment in Florida and people voting with their feet. In other words, perhaps deciding not to come to Florida because of a state policy regarding guns or schools or mental health. Do you think that could have any demonstrable effect in terms of the what's expected to be another record year for travel in the United States into Florida if the economy continues and the job market continues strong elsewhere?
I really doubt it. I really wonder if that would really make a difference. If you don't live in the state, would you really want to change your travel plans because of that? If it doesn't really, you know, touch you directly.
The travel industry, because it is so large and influential and such an economic force that touches all corners of the state here in Florida, is or can be a target for demonstrators or protesters for any number of different reasons. This one specifically coming out of the Stoneman Douglas school tragedy. How can the hospitality industry, the hotel industry, be used by the interests to try to gain leverage in an effort to affect public policy? Is it solely just over economic shaming in some cases, as well as calls for a boycott?
What we've seen in the past is that in the end, the consumer speaks. And I think this is where all of this is coming from. And that, you know, especially in the big corporate companies, you will see change if enough consumers demand change. And I think that is probably where this whole call is coming from. Now, when it comes to smaller, you know, more privately owned businesses, maybe not so much. But I think for the corporate businesses, that definitely is the case. I mean, I think, you know, it is so hard because just like you were saying, tourism and the tourism industry in Florida is, you know, there's so many parts to it, you know, from big corporate enterprises to travel, to airlines, to rental cars, to your mom and pop shop, to activities. And so it's just such a complex and interrelated industry that, you know, to call for a general boycott, I wonder if it's not going to hurt more people that depend on tourism, and especially in a state like Florida. You know, and maybe the answer is to voice your opinions more directly to the legislators instead of doing it indirectly.
And the students at Stoneman Douglas have been doing both. Carolyn Lusby, FIU Assistant Professor of Tourism. Still to come, we hear from someone who led a successful tourism boycott in South Florida almost 30 years ago.
What is the leverage you have to urge people in power to take the action that you need to take? Politicians in particular do not take action because they see the light. Politicians take action because they feel the heat. The number one industry in Florida is tourism.
This is the Sunshine Economy, using the force of finance after the Stoneman Douglas shooting. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening to WLRN. In the summer of 1990, Nelson Mandela was touring the United States after spending 27 years in jail in South Africa. He was set to visit Miami in late June. Local politicians had prepared a proclamation and were ready to give him a key to the city. But a week before his Miami visit, Mandela was on ABC's Nightline, where he acknowledged three leaders who supported the anti-apartheid efforts in South Africa. He named Libya's Muammar Gaddafi, PLO leader Yasser Arafat, and
Fidel Castro. Support our struggle to the hilt.
And that was enough for the Miami elected officials at the time to rescind the proclamation and cancel the key ceremony. It was a flashpoint of racial tension 10 years after the McDuffie riots were sparked by four white Miami-Dade police officers acquitted of beating a black man to death. In 1990, the Mandela snub by the Cuban-American leaders at the time led to what was called the Quiet Riot, a national boycott of Miami by black businesses and groups who refused to visit or bring conventions to the hotels here. It lasted for 1,000 days and meant losing out on millions of dollars of business and spending. It led to the first black-owned luxury resort hotel in the country on Miami Beach, single-member county commission districts, opening up the city and county commissions for elected officials, and scholarships for black students to study tourism and hospitality at FIU. David Hogg has used a similar tactic in his effort to get Florida lawmakers to pass gun control laws. Hogg is a senior at Stoneman Douglas High School. He's calling for spring break travelers to avoid coming to Florida unless legislation is passed. H.T. Smith was one of the central organizers of the Quiet Ride in the early 1990s. He knows what it's like to target tourism.
You know, the first thing in any type of movement like this is you have to seize the moral ground. They have the moral high ground. And the next thing you must do is look for leverage. What is the leverage you have to urge people in power to take the action that you need to take? You know, I always like to say that, like, politicians in particular do not take action because they see the light. Politicians take action because they feel the heat. The number one industry in Florida is tourism. And it is something that everybody can participate in. What it also does is it hurts the brand of tourism in Florida to have people who were themselves the victims of really a terrorist act, a massacre at their school of all places, leading this effort. They are definitely the good guys. So if the good guys are saying to all of the rest of the country, please do not support tourism here in Florida, because Florida will not support its children by enacting common sense legislation that could, one, reduce the capacity of the killing machines that these type of incidents are seeing. Two, just common sense things like age, et cetera. So I really believe that this has the potential for really causing some serious economic damage, which will then in turn increase the chances of having some responsiveness from our political leaders. But make no mistake about it, they're up against one of the most powerful foes in America, the National Rifle Association.
And the tourism industry, certainly here in Florida. Do you hear echoes of the economic boycott that you helped organize in the early 1990s in Dade County in this more general spring break boycott call from the student leaders?
Well, it's too early to say for certain, but definitely it could, in fact, form itself to be more like the type of successful boycott that we were able to lead. It took us now 1,000 days, but these young people have something very, very powerful that we could only dream of: the internet. Just think, we were leaving the boycott 1990 to 1993, we were in the 21st century with fax. We couldn't believe that in one day we could send a written document to somebody and get it back the same day. They now have social media. Social media is a very, very powerful tool that can have exponentially fast ability to communicate to people and to actually get some action.
Your economic boycott in the early 90s was geographically focused on Dade County and specifically focused on the hotel industry and the convention hotel industry at that.
Right. So the first thing is that they need to have focus. It could be Florida tourism. It could be specific activities that young people go to, things like urban weekend, spring break, et cetera. But they need to specify what's the target, you know, so everybody knows what the targets are. Secondly, they need to have specifically, everybody should know what are the goals. So you need to be able to measure the goals so you can measure your success. And you must have small, achievable goals on the way to the big goal. So let's just say the big goal is stop the sale of assault rifles. That is a major, major undertaking.
With a lot of resistance.
With a tremendous lot of resistance.
The legislative committees that have talked about and passed some initial measures of gun control proposals have not done an assault weapons ban.
But on the way to that, you can have big stores like Walmart say that Dick's, we're not going to sell weapons. And you can focus on that. You can show your gratitude to them when they do that and maybe have a wall for that. Here are the businesses that are lining up on common sense. A lot of them haven't said we're not going to sell guns. They're just saying we're not going to sell guns of war to civilians. You can have background checks, comprehensive universal background checks. You can have a lot of, you can have mental health things so that people want to be a part of a winner. And so as you achieve these goals, one, it energizes people. Hey, we did that. Let's move to the next one and the next one. And it gives people the energy to last because the National Rifle Association has a tremendous amount of money, a tremendous amount of committed supporters who will not only put their money where their mouth is, but on Election Day, they vote on one issue, the Second Amendment.
How does the voting component, the political component, and the desire and the goal of the student leaders and their supporters of changing law versus changing how an industry behaves, or in the case of the Quiet Riot in the early 90s, the inclusiveness of a major economic force?
This is a tremendous opportunity for these young student leaders. Because the whole premise behind the failure of legislators and to act, and not just the legislators, but the executive branch to act, is the desire to stay in office. And we know poll after poll after poll show that major majorities of people are on the side of these young student leaders on the issues of background checks and not selling assault weapons to 18-year-olds and even banning assault weapons. So now the focus has to be to get that majority who support you to be motivated to go to the polls to show them that you can support common sense gun legislation and still keep your job. That's the whole key. If people are not punished for supporting things that don't have common sense, like politicians will allow an 18-year-old who cannot buy a beer to buy a gun and they don't get kicked out of office, they're going to continue to do it. So in case someone, one of the young leaders are listening, focus on volunteering to get in campaigns of people who are running for office up and down the ballot who support their common sense legislative efforts regarding guns, mental illness, comprehensive background checks, and help them get elected. That will entirely change the calculus overnight.
With your experience in the early 90s and how you were able to bring together the community locally, focused on inclusion of blacks in the hotel industry as leveraged by the lack of African-American and black groups coming to town and other groups coming to town for convention space. This goes right at the pocketbook of a number of the people who are involved in the debate itself. In other words, I imagine some of the parents of the Stoneman Douglas school students probably work either directly or indirectly within the tourism industry here.
Right. And so what we did was, before we even started the boycott, we met with union members. The main union was HERE, H-E-R-E, Hotel Employee and Restaurant Employee Unions, because they really work at the entry level. And we were concerned that they would be the most hurt. When we gave them the statistics and the data of the low pay they were receiving, the low benefits they were receiving, and other areas where they were not getting an opportunity to even participate, they could not come out and say they supported the boycott. But they told us in our private meeting, we're rooting for you. Do what you got to do. You won't have us coming out criticizing you, the work that you're doing, because in the long run, this is going to help everybody. And so we use empirical data to show people just how unfair the system was in treating African Americans. You would believe the number of whites who supported it. It was a black-led boycott, but white people said no. Fair white people said this is not fair. The union roles for waiters, waitresses, and bartenders was all white. Now, okay, maybe we don't have a lot of black brain surgeons, but we got a lot of black bartenders, waiters, and waitresses. And people said, no, that's not right. We're going to help you to try to change that.
I think a significant difference, and wondering if you would agree with this, Professor Smith, is between your organized boycott in the 90s and the call for the spring break boycott of Florida here by the student leaders in Stoneman Douglas. Your boycott targeted specifically the industry it wanted to change. This does not. The student call for a boycott of spring break travelers not to come to Florida is directed at the travel industry, is directed at the largest, most significant industry, one of the biggest contributors of tax revenue as well in terms of local hotel bed taxes and sales taxes. But the change that the student leaders are trying to affect is not in the hotel industry.
I want you to remember now that when we started the boycott, that is exactly what the tourism industry said to us. They said, we did not snub Nelson Mandela. Those were politicians that did it. You should be over there dealing with the politicians. They were the ones that took back the proclamation. They were the ones that refused to give the key to the city. They're the ones that denounced him for his refusal to denounce Castro, Gaddafi, and others. And we said, well, if Nelson Mandela is not welcome to this town, we do not feel welcome. And look at these statistics. You all have been boycotting us. There are $5 billion going into the industry at that time. Black tourism and conventions was providing $1 billion. And we were saying, so we're putting $1 billion in to the industry. And we're being boycotted. We own no hotels. Right. We own no contracts. We own no management jobs. We own nothing. So basically, we're going to boycott you back until you stop boycotting us.
What are the lessons from your boycott? And I ask that question because there's been a substantial amount of academic research that's looked at the effect of economic boycotts. And frequently that research comes to the conclusion that there really isn't much of one, including the corporate boycotts that were done during the apartheid era in South Africa, that it wasn't the corporations being targeted by folks to boycott that led to ultimately South Africa changing its racial policies.
The very first thing is that these young student leaders have got to be sophisticated enough to know how important it is for them to maintain impeccable integrity. I can see this happening. One of the student leaders gets a call or a letter. They receive the scholarship for some anonymous sounding 501c3. And they accept the scholarship. And the next thing they know, someone's on Fox News saying to them, that organization is connected to the National Rifle Association, and it appears that they sold out. So they've got to maintain impeccable integrity.
Green mail.
Well, yeah.
Well, often referred to as green mail.
It is, absolutely. And it's enticing.
You've gone up against the hotel industry here in Dade County. The student-led call for a spring break boycott is statewide. Substantial resources. I have tried to have folks in the hospitality and the hotel industry come on the record to discuss this boycott. They have all refused. They said that they don't want to speak publicly about this one way or the other. What are they up against? Meaning the students. What are the students up against?
No, they're up against a formidable foe in this regard because of the advertising dollars and the connections to all of the power sources in the state of Florida, whether it's the executive branch, the legislative branch. And although the media has been playing this straight, when you start affecting the money, you start seeing, at least not with the reporting, but you start seeing in the editorials that they start saying, well, it's not focused. Why are you picking on this industry? You're hurting people who really need jobs and things like that. So they have to be aware of that. But secondly, I think that with regard to this type of boycott, I really think that they need, right now, they need focus. I think you ask anybody in the state of Florida who is not involved, well, just exactly what is it that these young leaders want you to do or not do? And most people can't say that. Mm. And so you need to know exactly what you need to do. One of the smartest things we did, and I'm not taking credit myself, was to name ourselves Boycott Miami. So every time someone reported on Boycott Miami, they were advancing the cause, our mission.
We last spoke in 2014, and one of the things that you told us was the result of the boycott, and not just the hotel ownership, not just the further inclusion, but some of the broader goals. I want you to hear back. This is you in 2014.
What the boycott did was it began to show people in power that they finally would have to respect black leaders like Mandela, respect black people like the African Americans and the Bahamian Americans and the Caribbeans. You haven't seen anything like that since.
I want to ask you, Professor, do you think that the student leaders of the Stoneman Douglas movement after this tragedy have the respect of the leaders?
With the young people, they have not earned their boots yet. They have not earned the respect yet. What they have is the moral authority. And so people don't, the people in power don't respect that they can get the job done. They just fear that they cannot attack them like they can attack adults because they're kids, because they're victims, and they have the moral authority. But one of the things, what took our boycott so long is that none of the leaders had any positions in town. The business community didn't know who we were, so they just thought we would get away. So they have to be persistent. And they, or if they show that they are persistent and they will not be denied, then they'll get the respect that they need. And then change will be made.
H.T. Smith was one of the organizers of the Quiet Riot in Miami back in the early 1990s. It was a black boycott of the local tourism industry, which led to more inclusion of blacks in the tourism business. He is a law professor at FIU. Still to come, conscience and capitalism. Florida teacher retirement money invested in the stocks of gun and ammunition makers.
I do believe there's probably other places that they could put money, and that's what we said to the governor. But we also want to make sure that it remains solvent.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, using the force of finance after the Stoneman Douglas shooting. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening today. The pension plan that pays Florida's public school teachers and staff when they retire saw the value of its U.S. stock investments jump 21% last year, but the stocks it owns in gun makers didn't do well at all. The Florida Retirement System pension plan is enormous. It holds more than $160 billion. $1.7 million of it is invested in three U.S. gun makers, according to its own year-end data. That's about $1 out of every $100,000. It's money invested in the stock of American Outdoor Brands, for instance. American Outdoor Brands used to be called Smith & Wesson. The plan also holds financial positions in Sturm Ruger and Vista Outdoor. Vista is the company behind Camelback Water Packs, Bell Bicycle Helmets, and Bushnell Binoculars. It also makes guns and ammunition. Vista stock fell 61% last year. American Outdoor stock dropped 39%. Ruger gained 6%. But stock price performance is not why the Florida Education Association wrote a letter to Governor Rick Scott after the Stoneman Douglas shooting.
We did send a letter to the governor just saying that that we would hope that he would look at that and that there would be other places that we could invest our money.
That's Joanne McCall. She's president of the association, which represents public school teachers and staff, the Florida Education Association. Even though the money is invested for teachers and school staff in retirement, like most pension plans, they actually have no say over how the money is invested.
The teachers and the support staff are passive people in the retirement system, meaning we are recipients of it, but we have no say in how the investments are done.
The Florida Education Association has not requested the plan to sell its gun stocks, but if it did, it looks like two out of the three would have been profitable investments. According to the plan's portfolio, at the end of last year, the combined investment in all three was up $216,000, indicating at least some of the positions are long-term investments for the pension plan.
Quite honestly, I'm not an investment counselor, and there are many things that take place. I don't want to get into that realm of trying to decide where things go. I think people who sit at that table who have that expertise should do that. I do believe there's probably other places that they could put money, and that's what we said to the governor, that we would hope that he would find other places to put our money. But we also want to make sure that it remains solvent.
Now, the state legislature has set rules for what the pension plan cannot invest in. For instance, it cannot invest in companies that do certain business with Sudan and Iran. It cannot own stock or bonds of companies that violate the Cuban trade embargo. And it cannot invest in companies that boycott business with Israel. Now, there is no mandated exclusion of gun makers or tobacco companies or other firms, for that matter, targeted by what's called socially responsible investing. That's the investment strategy that judges a company not just on profit potential, but also considerations such as health and the environment. So, still to come, how hard is it to use financial force in a stock investment?
To the extent that folks don't want to violate their conscience, go for it. Just don't try to make this sort of a widespread thing where you're trying to gain a lot of momentum or make it go viral and have everyone divest.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, using the force of finance after the Stoneman Douglas shooting. I'm Tom Hudson. Since the shooting, a student leader at Stoneman Douglas High School has called for a travel boycott of Florida until gun control measures are approved by state lawmakers. And the head of the Florida Education Association has asked Governor Rick Scott to look at the teacher pension investments in the stocks of gun makers. Now, these are separate requests, but both recognize the influence, finance, and the message of money in a divisive debate, this one over guns. Sean Davies is a finance professor at the University of Colorado. He has studied investors targeting a company over ethical or moral reasons. One motivation, he says, is social.
They want to sort of stigmatize those companies that are inflicting harm or, you know, generating whatever negative externality they believe is being put on society.
For instance, a cigarette company, an oil company, or a gun maker. We spoke with Davies over Skype. Beyond sending some kind of moral message, though, he says, is the desire to financially hurt a company by selling its stock.
Calls for large-scale divestment campaigns are trying to do more than just be loud. They're trying to do something to the financials of those companies.
Such as drive down a stock price. Now, Davies is careful to tell us his interest is in the effect of these types of strategies, not any specific policy outcome like gun control. It's not as simple as selling shares of a company that you own just because you don't agree with their business practices or products, though. Like the stock of gun makers owned by the Florida Teachers Pension Plan, those shares probably were not bought directly from the company itself, but rather someone else owned them before. So if you buy that stock, your money is not really going to the company, at least not directly.
There's a lot of bad economics when it comes to that. For example, there was an article came out in the New York Times just a couple days ago, and the title of the article was, "You might be giving gun companies money even if you don't own a gun." And the idea there was that if your pension or your 401k holds stocks in these gun manufacturers, that you're somehow giving these gun manufacturers money, which isn't really entirely true.
That's because the companies long ago sold these shares. Since then, other buyers and sellers have been trading them, but likely not the company. So an investment in a gun company stock, for instance, is not the same thing as somehow giving money to the gun company directly. Like the teacher that he is, Davies offers a hypothetical for an example. He mentions, say, a company named ABC. ABC company makes widgets, he tells us. It sells stock for the first time and invests that money into a factory making widgets. How well it makes and sells widgets now will influence its stock price. If the business is bad, the stock price likely would go down. But a lower stock price would not necessarily hurt the making of widgets at the factory.
Now, the market price of those shares is going to reflect the productivity of this company. When the company is selling a lot of widgets, the market price will go up. When the company is not selling many widgets, the price is going to go down. But the converse is not true. If we influence the market price, that doesn't make the factory any more or less productive.
So if selling a stock in a company that you don't agree with doesn't really impact its business, what could? Well, Davies, the professor at the University of Colorado who studied this, says pay attention to who owns a lot of the stock, for instance, a company's executives. But even then, selling a stock for social reasons, hoping to inflict some financial pain on a company or its executives, may be counter-effective, according to Davies's research. That's because company executives oftentimes get part of their pay packages in company stock awarded by a dollar amount. So if the stock price goes down, they could just get more shares.
So, I mean, ideally, if you're an executive, since most executives during their career are acquiring their firm stock, you would like to be the target of a divestment campaign up until the moment at which you are going to start selling your holdings. So you'd like to have an artificially low stock price to acquire more shares. And then you'd like for that price pressure to be relieved at the time you're selling.
So in other words, buy low, sell high. Davies says for financial force to work, a company's executives would need to be selling stock too in order for them to experience potential loss.
So I think first and foremost, you know, there is an element of you don't want to violate your own conscience. And so I understand a lack of willingness to purchase these stocks. And I think to the extent that pensions don't feel comfortable holding these because they have sort of a strong reaction to knowing that those stocks are in their portfolios, there's not a problem with that from the economics side of this. Where it becomes problematic is when it's a large enough divestment campaign where you start influencing the stock price. So to the extent that folks don't want to violate their conscience, go for it. It's better to be, you know, have a clear conscience. Just don't try to make this sort of a widespread thing where you're trying to gain a lot of momentum or make it go viral and have everyone divest.
And that has not happened here in the case of gun stocks. Now, one of the largest stockholders of gun makers is asking, though, how they are responding to the Stoneman Douglas shooting in Parkland. A company by the name of BlackRock, it is a massive investment manager. It helps direct more than $6 trillion of investment power. The company sells investment products that mimic familiar stock indices like the S&P 500. Another index, the S&P 600, is made up of smaller publicly traded companies, and that includes gunmaker Vista Outdoor. BlackRock's own version of that index, including the Vista shares, totals $36 billion of investor money. You can follow us on Twitter. Don't forget, find us on the handle at WLRN. Also look for a podcast of this program by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. Pilar Ribe is our technical director today. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.